Kevin Faith is faculty at the University of Utah in Public Health Informatics. She has her bachelor's degree from Georgetown University in nursing, her MPH from Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore in epidemiology. She was an EIS officer from 1990 to 1992 and worked in lead poisoning and the prevention branch at CDC. And then she received her PhD in 2006 from the University of Utah in biomedical informatics. From 1979 to 1985, she worked as a public health nurse, pediatric nurse of infectious diseases, and in the AIDS branch in a variety of settings in Denver, Alaska, Mississippi, and South Carolina. From 1988 to 1990, she worked as an epidemiologist, communicable disease branch, in the communicable disease branch and surveillance unit in the North Carolina Department of Environmental Health. After completing her EIS training, she was hired as a staff epidemiology in the lead poisoning prevention branch at CDC. And from 1990 to 1993, she was an officer and active duty commissioned corps for the United States Public Health Service in Atlanta, Georgia. From 1995 to 2000, she worked as an epidemiologist for studies of hepatitis A and firearm-related injuries for the Bureau of Epidemiology and Surveillance at the Salt Lake Valley Health Department in Salt Lake City, Utah. Catherine?
I'm not sure where. Thank you.
That wasn't the right one.
I'm not sure where that got dug up. No, that's great. But anyway, I think the bottom line is I've worked as a public health epidemiologist for a long time and have lots of sympathy and experience with the paper-based processes of public health reporting and have always wanted to improve the process. And that's what's made me so passionate about thinking about how we can improve and automate the process of reportable disease reporting. So Sean Granis is not presenting this morning, and so there'll just be two of us. We don't see Arun here, so maybe it's just going to be me. But anyway, when I found out Sean wasn't presenting, I went ahead and left some of the slides in my talk that I would have cut out. And so I will be going longer than maybe you would expect if you were expecting three. So I'm going to talk about our view, enterprise view of knowledge representation for what conditions are reportable where. And this project is, I'm presenting, but this project has had a lot of brains thinking about this problem. In our team in Utah involves the folks listed here, including Susan Motyth, who's an epidemiologist and microbiologist at the Utah Department of Health, ZW, a programmer, Deepthi Rajiv, a graduate student who's been digging in the weeds for 5 years on this project, Rick Bradshaw, an information architect, enterprise architect, was with Intermountain and now is with the University of Utah. Nathan Holtz, who's a knowledge management expert, and Scott Naris, also an enterprise architect and systems engineer with the University of Utah. This project would not be possible without the help of specifically Rita Altimore at University of Washington, who's just been a fabulous collaborator and given lots of insight into ELR and how things work in public health, and also, of course, the support from CDC, and also lots of interactions, not financial support, but lots of interaction and input from folks with the case report standardization work group. So I'm going to present an outline. This is when you convert slides over, and sometimes they, anyway, so this is the outline of the talk. And those of you that came late, Sean Granis is not going to be presenting, and so my talk will be a little bit longer, and I went ahead and share more information. So first of all, I wanted to just set the stage. The conversations about public health reporting oftentimes start with people thinking about labs and hospitals needing to detect what's reportable, and things are, first of all, let me orient, reporting entities are labs and hospitals and clinics and on down the line. There's ELR reporting and EHR case reporting from the clinical setting. And the conversation often starts with detecting events and sending them to public health so that public health can receive them and investigate and do control measures and monitor and report trends and whatnot. And public health entities, you know, involve an investigation phase as well as a clinical and surveillance phase that oftentimes involve different personnel. And the public health entities involved, I think most of you already are very familiar with this, but involve a whole range of different levels of entities. But in my view, the process starts before that. It starts with public health defining and publishing the criteria that they want to receive. And that information needs to be pushed to or accessible to the folks that need to be doing the reporting. And so this project is focused on the very top task, defining and publishing the reporting criteria. And as we all know, the current process from a laboratory perspective is that public health puts information on websites. Each of the states has their own websites that define what it is that's supposed to be reported. And laboratories and you know, go to those websites, they and manually review the information and integrate that information into their own system in some format. Basically, there's some system for documenting the reporting logic, and that logic is maintained, that knowledge is maintained by the reporting systems. And it's up to them to know when that logic changes. And oftentimes, they find out about changes in the logic when they're not doing what they're supposed to, and somebody says, well, why aren't you doing it? And they say, well, we didn't know, and so then things get updated. And then the information, you know, is available to the lab information system, which then would send information to public health. Basically, the reporting specifications are described on websites and posters. They're not executable. They're HTML pages or PDFs. They're often misleading, actually. They're often representing case classification criteria, not case reporting criteria. And also there's differences between states and they change periodically. And there are also differences between what states want and what CDC says that they want. And so the idea, the proposed process is to have some knowledge management system that contains reporting specifications that is authored and published and reviewed by public health. And that knowledge can be maintained by public health, and that information is accessible, you know, on the web for human eyes, and also can be pushed out in a standard format, and also may be queried by reporting systems that may use that information and have their systems be updated as public health is updating their specifications. The information can be communicated. So this is a little bit of a complicated slide, but since I have a little extra time, for those of you that are coming late, just Sean Granitz is not presenting, and so I'm going to be taking a little longer. And so this is a laboratory perspective, a future process. This is a clinical setting. Specimens are collected, and you know, orders are sent, and the specimen is sent to the laboratory. In the laboratory setting, the specimen and the orders receive, they test it, they generate results. The results are stored in the LIMS. Copies of the results are sent back to the clinical setting, and the information stored in a data warehouse, usually somewhere. This is a generic process. There's also a compliance and reporting domain within a laboratory where they seek public health logic and specifications. They are continually identifying new public health logic and specifications by phone or, you know, through a knowledge management system that can provide them the information. That information is integrated, and then there's three main processes within a laboratory that need to be, what's that? Yeah, everyone, hi. So the specifications need to allow the ability to apply evidence detection logic to identify the clinical events that need to be reported. There's logic that's needed to be applied to apply reporting specification logic to determine if it's reportable and how to report. For example, you know, someone just in the talk earlier said, well, lead surveillance is really easy. It's just one LOIC test. Well, actually, when we went to a lab in Utah, a major lab that reports to all 50 states, and we looked at their reporting logic for lead, it's actually very complicated because you have different age criteria, you have different level criteria. In one state, it's report if the level is above 15 among children less than 16. In another state, it's above 18, and children is defined as 18, or 20, and children are defined as 18. Also, if levels have different levels, then you report to this office. If it's a different level within that state, you report it to that office. So you've got 50 states, about 20 different or 30 different logic criteria, and then you have two different places you need to report within a state. So that's 100 times, more than that. So what you think from a public health perspective, and I'm a public health person, but what public health thinks is easy from a laboratory perspective, trying to report to public health is actually quite complicated, even when you think it's very simple. Anyway, so that's what that's all about. This is getting the LOIT code, right? This is getting the actual criteria. And where do you actually send it within that state agency? And then this is applying the logic to create the evidence report that meets the specifications. That's, okay, you've detected this thing. Now, what additional data needs to be grabbed and included into that message or document? And then somebody may need to review it. Where's this thing? Got it. Where's my light? Oh. And then the system needs to transmit it in a certain format, and it needs to be received by public health. So the reporting specifications that we're talking about are not just what LOIT code should be used. It's a whole set of other pieces of information. I also want to just throw in some background that's related to the methods that we use for this project in terms of we use usability. Usability processes can improve user efficiency, usability methods. So usability processes can improve user efficiency and effectiveness and satisfaction. There's quite a bit of work that's been done outside the health arena. It's been established to improve return on investment, and for health settings in particular, it can improve user productivity, patient safety, cognitive support, training and development efficiencies. And one thing that we've noticed is usability processes and methods have not been widely used in public health, and this is we'll share with you how we used it. Anyway, so the goal for our project is to demonstrate a new model for managing public health knowledge to improve the ability of public health to communicate with labs and other reporters to influence their public health reporting to support public health goals, to improve the completeness and specificity of information reported to public health in a secure, timely, and efficient manner, and incorporate usability methods into the development process. So we'll talk about system design. So our objective was to develop requirements for reporting rules and specifications for a knowledge authoring environment and for the information that needs to be exchanged for public health case reporting. So initially we're focused on lab reporting, and in the future the exact same infrastructure can be used for case reporting and alerting. So our initial methods were to review the current public health websites, and we created storyboards with users in Utah, and we conducted structured interviews with public health and laboratory compliance officers and clinical folks, and also conducted usability testing of an initial design. When we reviewed websites, we reviewed four websites, Utah, Washington, Colorado, and LA County. And this is just an example of some of the requirements that we identified, that reporting specifications should be displayed by type of reporter. You need to think about specifications from the perspective of the person who is needing that information, because they're different for different reporters. Also, there's a need to link information so that it's ready to the rules and lists and whatnot, so they're readily available to the user. And another example was need to display specimen submission requirements on the site where laboratorians would be looking. There were just a whole bunch of examples of things that have translated into our initial design. We used storyboards. An example was a national lab in Utah is developing an automated detection system to detect reportable conditions in the U.S. The compliance officer's tasked with identifying what, when, and how conditions are reported in Utah. Current focus is group A strep. Assuming the compliance officer has contacted you, please answer the following questions from the perspective of a public health entity. you know, what information is needed for the lab to determine if this is reportable in Utah? You know, what are the different lists, rules, documents, websites that they need to review to obtain this information? And do Utah health agencies only want labs to report cases belonging to Utah residents, or do they also want laboratories to report those belonging to non-residents if tests are performed in Utah? There's a lot of, when you start digging into this, you start seeing lots of variation between states as to whether things are reportable based on where the laboratory is located or where the person is located. One of the items that came out of this is that the public health personnel think that it's important to define in the reporting criteria the test name and the results that they're interested, actually at the level of the method, not at the LOINC code level, but also what specimen sources that they want to accept results for, and also whether they want to receive preliminary or final results. And while some information is important, for example, some needed pregnancy status, vital status, age criteria, even just for laboratory data. For group A strep, this wasn't important, but others it was. And basically, the requirements, an example of that is that test status needs to be included in the content requirements, and also the system should allow public health departments to relax constraints used to identify reporting criteria. They need to be able to, on the fly, be able to change their criteria during an outbreak and whatnot. It's not something that just changes once a year. You need to have a system that can support being able to modify the criteria. So, usability testing has typically been used to evaluate initial designs for congruence between a user's conceptual models and workflow and tasks. And experts suggest that evaluations with actual applications should be done early and often, not at the end of the system process. And so we use this technique to refine initial requirements and to validate requirements with the users through a design prototype, rather than developing a 50-page textual document, which actually is a living document that we have that can be shared. But in order to generate the requirements, we used mock-ups, because it's really hard to say, what do you want? You need to show people, and then they respond to it. And this also has assisted the programmer. So we wanted to validate the major tasks and user results for iterative development. We had informal sessions, and we developed scenarios, and we used semi-structured interviews and did a talk aloud process. We created scenarios for looking at the information for one state for all conditions, looking at one state, one condition, looking at one state, all conditions, and multiple state, all conditions. And we compiled the tasks typically conducted during a reporting and created the visual displays. We used 11 major stakeholders. We took three major stakers and we used 11 participants. We included two epidemiologists at a state, three different local health departments, a state epidemiologist, and interviewed two laboratorians, two infection control practitioners, and two clinicians, and looked at the information for Utah, Washington, and Colorado. And so we... from a blank piece of paper...
Your passcode has been confirmed. If you need technical assistance during your call, please press star followed by zero. You are the first caller to this conference. Please wait while others join. After the tone, please state your name. Thank you. There are one parties in conference, including you.
That makes me feel really good. Okay. Me, myself, and I are up here. All right. So from a blank page, we iterated to this view of a public health reporting tool would need a way for someone to say, you know, what jurisdiction they're interested in looking at, whether they're wanting to look at this from the perspective of a lab, a hospital, a healthcare provider, and you know, sort of being other here, you know, what reportable events? Another thing that we identified is there's a need to be able to look at information on a condition perspective or an organism perspective, and this actually, you know, would change based on whether, actually this is wrong, the laboratory view should have the organism first and then the disease second. This is a mock-up, this is the, what the users. And then they all, people also wanted, you know, the time period for query. One thing that laboratories in particular were interested in is they want to know what's reportable, but they also want to know, is there a, something that's new since a certain date? When have things been changed? Has it, has there any, been any change in the last year or the last 6 months that we need to be aware of? Then this is the, you know, the view that people iterated to wanting, you know, the context up here. It's, they're wanting the laboratory reporting criteria. They're wanting it for these jurisdictions, for all reportable events, and for what time period. Here they want all events. And basically the view is a list of events. This one's correct, you know, lab, you want the organisms first, and by the way, they belong to these diseases. And basically the first thing they wanted is what's the time frame and when a specimens are specimens or submission is required. And actually one thing that would be very interesting from, even just from a perspective of harmonization across jurisdictions for different state health departments, and I think for CSDE to be able to see the variation and where potentially there's unnecessary variation, this would be a useful view of the information. Anyway, then you click on one state, drill in, and now you have the same thing, but it's Utah. You have the diseases, and now more detail, you know, the time frame, the whether specimen submission is required, click on here for more details. And then reporting methods, click on here for more details. The other thing is people don't want to know every possible way to report to a state. They want to know, tell me how you really want me to report, and then give me more information if I need it. And then clicking into a specific disease, it's the same thing up here, but you're looking at the one disease. This is open, so now it's giving you the more detail and whatnot, but you could close that. And then basically the reporting criteria, the view that, that folks wanted is the laboratory criteria at the level of component and method. And they want to be able to potentially drill into LOINC codes, but the clinicians do not want LOINC codes. It's just laboratories want it if it's needed for mapping and whatnot. But this is the level of detail that the epidemiologists want to communicate, and it's the level of detail that the laboratorians wanted to receive. And then when you drill into the LOINC, you know, click the LOINC, then you would get the details of the LOINC SNOMED mapping. So the major requirements from that were that multiple types of views are needed, that clinical reporters do not want LOINC codes, they need the capability to sort by name, condition name and organism, sort by time frame, have progressive disclosure. And also laboratories want to display with only the lab findings and suppress the clinical information that they don't need to know about. So a major finding from this is the idea that from the position statements where the information is being documented and authored by the CSDE epidemiologists and whatnot, the level of component method, lab finding, classification is what is needed for being able to author and communicate what's reportable. And that's something that needs to be built into the RCMT tables, and we've been playing with that some. We also did a lab survey where we wanted to describe current processes in labs and understand how labs are detecting and reporting events, determine their current resources, and determine their business need and interest in a service that would provide logic for automated detection and reporting. We randomly sampled 200 independent and 200 hospital labs nationwide among the CLIA certified labs. And we're just analyzing the results right now, but the preliminary results are labs, you know, they're primarily using written and email notification from health agencies and to update their info, and they want to improve their methods. For detecting culture-based bacteriology and serology events that need to be reported, most hospitals are using manual methods. They're not using methods that can be triggered by automated systems. They and that independent laboratories use manual and partially automated methods. Very few have fully automated methods. Over 50% of the independent labs are using standards, messaging and coding standards, but only 38 to 53% of the hospital labs are using HL7, Loinc, and SNOMED. But that doesn't mean they're necessarily using them correctly. It's just that they said they're using them and they know what it is. So the major requirements we identified from everything is the need to display jurisdictional information, reporting criteria, reporting action, and references. Need role-based views and authoring, and the output needs to be both human readable with navigation for more detail depending on the stakeholder, and also computable for display and for standard rules engines. So this is our use case diagram of the whole process. Essentially, there's a need, this up here is the process that should be done once. You know, from the perspective of if you think CSTE or some entity, CDC, you know, be able to author reporting criteria based on the CSTE position statements. This is my hope for the world, is be able to and be able to import knowledge from the FinBAS, where you'd have mapping tables that can provide the content that and that information would be shareable. And then down here within a state, you would author and you would localize the information. You would provide the content related to your jurisdiction, what the specific reporting actions are, what the references are. You would modify the criteria based on what your needs are in your jurisdiction. And there is a need to be able to allow states to modify and localize the information, both because there are diseases that are different across the state, but also in any one jurisdiction over time there may be changes, and especially in a outbreak scenario, you're modifying what you want to receive. So there needs to be localization, but it would benefit to start with a core set of common information. And then that can be authored, and then the custodian of the information, the state epidemiologist, their team would validate and release the information. And then there should be a way to view the reporting specifications, be able to query and export and subscribe for notifications. And all of this would be what the reporting system would be able to access. So you start getting into what if all the time, and basically we decided to go ahead and tackle it. So what would be the authoring workflow? There's authors involved, there's reviewers, and there's legal authenticators. That's sort of an HL7 term, but it's basically the person who stamps it. And the authoring privileges are defined by role and jurisdiction in a user profile. An author, they would have a form, they would author that form, they'd add content, then they could review the form in the reviewer mode. Is it ready for reviewers? Yes, send it on to the reviewer. The reviewer would be either another epidemiologist or whatever. They would review it. They could add comments. Say, I agree, or this needs to be changed. And in fact, this same process could be used in the position statement authoring process, the more I've thought about it. But basically, then, is it ready for the next level? If it's not, then route it back for changes. But at least all the information would be tracked in one place. And then if it is ready for, the authenticator, go ahead and send it off to them. And then basically they could comment if they like it. Then where's my thingy? They would, if it needs to go back for more comments and changes, do that. If not, it's ready to publish, and then the status would become active. And then, of course, within each stage of the workflow, there should be a way for someone to inactivate something or delete it. So that's sort of the design. That is the design that elements that we've come up with just from everything that I just, all the review and input from everyone. So the design objectives for a system would be to create a model system. We're not creating the operational system that would be used today. We are developing a reference implementation, which is to help inform the development of what we think would be a component for a national structure. So this model, the model needs to be scalable to support creation of new information that public health wants to communicate. The model that's developed needs to allow public health authorities to create, manage, and publish their own knowledge, needs to allow access to computable and human readable information, improve the transparency of requirements. Right now it's so spread out and it's just really hard to harmonize. And there's variation that is unnecessary. We need to leverage advanced IT, and we need to use standards and open source tools. So the approach we've taken is to build off of the infrastructure that's already being developed and funded by NIH through the CTSA, the Clinical Translational SA. Build the infrastructure that, and this is the infrastructure that's being developed for clinical research, which actually there's so many parallels between what's needed in informatics for clinical research, extracting data, creating forms, reporting information. It's so similar. Basically, what we have here is, there's a lab information system on the outside and a clinical information system here. And in the infrastructure, there's a terminology server. We're using Apollon's DTS, which is an open source product. And that's where, you maintain the latest versions of Moink and SNOMED and whatnot. What we've been developing is the knowledge base, which is basically, a database of XML files that, and then there's the service layer, and then there's the application layer where the interface would be. And then the other thing we've been developing is the knowledge-based authoring and management tools. And basically creating the functions to be able to create new, save, update, manage the content that would be stored down in here. And the idea is the knowledge would represent core knowledge per the position statement, and then allow state-specific logic and reporting action be able to add on different pieces of content that wouldn't necessarily be stored there. It could be just linking to something that's stored in FinBads or at the CADSR, the CABIG, the NCI infrastructure and whatnot. We're not trying to store everything here. This is essentially what it's come down with. It's an interface to be able to integrate all this and be able to localize. And then we have been looking at different ways to output the information using either tools or ART and ML. It actually doesn't really matter because we have an informatics team that actually can now go back and forth between the two. So, and then the idea is that the content is, using, current methods of management, where we've got, header that where you have the where you put the context of information with the IDs and labels and whatnot, and who's managing the information, and then specifying the context of use, what jurisdiction, spatial context, topical context, temporal context, what's the time frame that this is relevant to, which is really important for alerts, and then the role, who is this? Is this an author role, a reviewer role, or blah blah blah, or is it a laboratory role, a clinician role? Essentially, the interface that I showed is basically someone specifying what role they have. And then in the body of a reportable event resource, you would have different chunks of information, basically. And so what we've ended up coming to from, so what I showed before was the view. This is the authoring piece. The authoring piece is similar, and this is, again, a mock-up. This is not the, so you have the context, you have the actions here, you have a navigation panel here, and then the workbench is the piece in the middle. And basically, you've got pieces of information that you're authoring, and they're in different statuses. And then I'm just showing you an example of the one screen for reportable events. Kind of ignore the top, but the part that I want you to see is, when you would import the RCMT table and do some processing to that, the piece of the information that the epidemiologist wants to author is at this level, detection of blip by blip, detection of this component, it's detection of salmonella, detection of C. trachomatis, whatever, by PCR, culture, whatnot. And they want to author it. They don't want to be authoring rows of Loenkens nomads. They want to know that the associated Loenkens nomads are at the level that they can make a decision about what they want to receive. And then, you know, yes, no. We looked at the Loenkens nomad, the RCMT for chlamydia, and zipped it up and classified it in this kind of way. And basically, there are things in there that the epidemiologist. They're in there because that's in there is the universe, but it's not what there are sub-classifications that the health department does not want to receive. So our next steps is to get user input to evaluate the proposed authoring workflow, to refine the strategies and interface for reviewing and selecting the lab criteria, and to test the models for the lab and clinical criteria, which I didn't talk about, to export to OpenCDS decision support tool, which is what we're using for our, in Utah, we're one of the Beacon Project sites, and we're using this infrastructure and the output from this for the input to the Beacon Project to be able to extract the data from the HIE. And the purpose of this is to inform and leverage strategies for maintaining not the only purpose, but one of the purposes to inform and leverage strategies for the RCMT table. And then our funding was just cut, so we are challenged by that, but we will go ahead and, particularly with the Beacon Project, really focus down on what it is that's needed for the Beacon and hope that the work that we've done will inform the next steps on the national level. And thank you.
Any questions for Catherine? We have one person in the phone.
Hi, really enjoyed your presentation. So I thought it was very detailed and comprehensive. A question that I do have is that when you showed the way that you had your service layer, application layer, terminology, and the architecture you had set up there, have you been thinking at all about using some of the ontology services that come out of NCBO as an ancillary or another piece of the puzzle? Because I know that from my experience with, say, CA-BIG, that there's a certain limitation to the way that you can have terminology constrained in a particular way, and semantic technologies seem to have come a long way in the last 5 years. So mm-hmm. I'm interested in what your thoughts have been about that.
Yeah, so actually we have. And I think that would be another resource of information that we would want to, especially with thinking about, when you start thinking about how to organize the information to be able to make it useful, you need to start representing it in an ontology. So, yes.
Okay. And then are you aware of any effort going on for like a public health-oriented ontology? I mean, I've been looking for something like that for a while. I haven't seen anything. I didn't know if your group has been investigating that at all.
So we have another room. Are you going to... You've been talking about that.
Yeah, there's some work going on, the public health ontology, and I think, was there a session this PHI conference? I think there was a demonstration at the booth, you could seek out with him, and he has completed some reporting requirements, ontology for public health, so that would be...
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
questions?
This is more of a content question than a structural question, but in one of your slides, you had earlier slides, you had a screen which showed the reportability, I think, by frequency for each different disease, and it was by different jurisdiction. So is it really changed that much from state to state? Is that the whole purpose of why you need such a system like that? So that still has not been standardized from a policy level.
No.
And are there moves in that direction, or is it just, that's just the way it is?
It's just the way it is, and it's an artifact of everything being, previously being paper-based and everybody being only, public health looks at things from their own perspective. They're not looking at it from the perspective of who's trying to report to them, is my view. I mean, we actually have been planning a paper on unnecessary variation, and everything we get into, just every item that you think would be really simple has an amazing amount of variation that just exists because things have evolved over time. But I don't believe that the variation, I think if it were easy for people to see the variation and easy to harmonize it, they would be willing to do that. And I think that, but there should be a move towards harmonization, but the ability to localize. There always has to be that ability. But I think people would stop making such variation if they realized, if they were more aware of it.
I have just one quick question. On the architectural model, you had the terminology server. What software did you say you used for that?
It's Apollon's DPS. Thank you.